following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0559. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, actor Sean Kanan, who is the creator, producer, and star of the streaming show within a show called Studio City.
This is a project that's kind of been my baby for a really long time. One of those things that I would work on, I'd stick in my desk drawer, I'd pull it out, I'd work on it some more. The story centers around my character, Sam Stevens, who is the star of the number two soap opera in the country, Hearts on Fire. And Sam is an aging soap star. He is in the middle of contract negotiations that aren't going well. Sort of a younger version of him is brought on the show as competition. It deals with the show within a show.
And Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and this time on Book Banter, we go behind the bench with a biography of Hall of Fame Montreal Canadiens coach Toe Blake. The puck drops here later on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0559, was Peter J. Radomski, who is a well-known Montreal comedian who normally works out of the Comedy Nest here in Montreal. Of course, like so many businesses, they are currently shut down, but they will be back in the old Forum building, and I'm sure they will be bigger and better as they dole out the laughter that we so desperately need right about now. Thank you very much, Peter, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make the show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A Maryland pilot expressed frustration with the coronavirus pandemic by using a 194-mile flight path to spell out bleep COVID-19. The profane message, which can be seen on aviation tracking websites FlightRadar24.com and FlightAware.com, took about 2 hours to spell out during the flight over the Aberdeen area. The Piper PA-28 Cherokee aircraft took off from Harford County Airport at 4:02 p.m. and landed at the same airport at 5:51 p.m. The plane was registered to Dean Hines of Baltimore County and was piloted by his 19-year-old son, Gregor. Said Gregor, "We just got a new compass in the airplane and I just had to check it out somehow." He said he used the opportunity to, quote, "express how I feel about the virus." Well, at 19, he can spell and fly. What a catch. In Logrono, Spain, an unidentified man pushed the envelope on Spain's stringent lockdown rules, which make an exception for pet owners who are allowed to go outside briefly with their pets. The National Police tweeted a photo on April 24th of the man being arrested for sitting on a city bench holding his pet fish in a fish bowl. Well, you know, some people are going stir-crazy, so you can't blame a guy for trying. I say the onus is on the authorities who didn't clarify the meaning of pet. And it seems that this whole lockdown is really having an effect on some people. In Sydney, Australia, a suburb there of Marrickville, a family has resorted to erecting a fence and a warning sign to scare away a mystery human pooer who has allegedly been defecating next to their garage. The sign reads, "We have installed this fence and a camera to hand over to police. We understand that COVID-19 is tough on everyone, but please stop bleeping on our garage." The message also includes directions to a nearby public toilet. Gee, I wonder if the guy had toilet paper. You know, the world has lost a lot with the COVID-19 epidemic, but brace yourself for another bit of stunning bad news. Because of the massive reduction in the use of gasoline, there's a growing shortage in the United States of carbon dioxide. That's good, right? Well, not if you like beer or soda. They're infused with CO2 to make them bubbly. The gas is a byproduct of ethanol production, which is mixed with gasoline, and 34 of the 45 ethanol plants that sell CO2 in the U.S. have cut or stopped production, and at least some American beer companies are also having to cut production. But Denmark's Carlsberg Group doesn't anticipate any shortages, explains spokesman Kasper Elbjorn. We, in line with our sustainability program, create our own CO2 and capture it during the brewing process. Oh, yippee. You know, I just read Kasper's explanation straight without adding any emphasis on any of his words, but I somehow get the feeling that there was an air of smugness and just a soupçon of glee in his verbiage. Don't drink your beer too quickly, Kasper. I wouldn't want you to choke on it. Yeah. With most contact-heavy personal services shut down due to the pandemic, it's been hard to get a haircut. But if you live in New Hampshire, don't you dare cut your own hair. That's a criminal offense punishable by up to a year in prison. It's similarly illegal to give someone else, even a family member, a shave. Why? Well, last year, the state's Office of Professional Licensure raked in $13.2 million in licensing fees, and most licenses are available only after taking hundreds of hours of classes and a written examination. Legislators wanted violations in licensing laws to be punished by much more than a slap on the hand. Really? Really? You know, some politicians really need, I don't know, a license to legislate, available only after taking hundreds of hours of classes and a written examination, and maybe paying a $100,000 fee. That way we can weed out the riffraff and idiots. And how far would you go to entertain the kids in your house during these endless days of social distancing? An 18-year-old woman in Virginia may have set the bar. The woman, Amari Dancy, was playing an innocent game of hide-and-seek with her younger cousins when she decided to climb into the family washing machine to avoid being found. Great hiding spot, but getting out turned out to be an issue when she was finally located. Her family had to phone the local fire department, which partially disassembled the machine to extract the red-faced teen. Said Amari, "I mean, it's pretty embarrassing, but all I can do is laugh it off." Well, at least she didn't swallow any Tide Pods while she was in there. Daniel Ulfelder is an attorney in Santa Rosa Beach, Florida, who worries that the lack of social distancing by beachgoers will spread COVID-19. Said Daniel, "I felt like something needed to be done because they're moving very quickly to open beaches prematurely." His plan? Dress up as the Grim Reaper and show up at open beaches around the state. To support his Florida Grim Reaper tour, Ulfelder is asking for donations to the political campaigns of candidates running against incumbents like Governor Ron DeSantis and U.S. Representative Matt Gaetz, both Republicans, by the way. A woman told Ulfelder he was scaring people, and he's fine with that. If people are scared, he said, then they'll leave. Why do I get the feeling that he'll actually just draw attention and maybe even get COVID-19 himself? Ah, the best laid plans of mice and men. And speaking of the Grim Reaper, the bells mean it's time to check the Darwin File.
I am the Grim Reaper. I am death.
A woman from Kazakhstan fell to her death while trying to take a picture in Turkey. 31-year-old Olesya Suspetsina was celebrating the end of a local COVID-19 lockdown when she fell 35 meters off a cliff. Olesia had been on a hike in Duden Park in Antalya after the lockdown in Sputnik, Turkey ended. She climbed over a safety barrier in order to pose over the cliff's edge, but slipped on the grass and plummeted. Her photographer friend called the police, who located her body in the water before taking it to the morgue. The death was ruled an accident. Olesia had worked for years as a tour guide in Turkey and had written on Instagram, "I will always admire the beauty of the Turkish nature. This is my paradise." No, Olesia, this was literally your downfall. Because the tree of life is often self-pruning.
I have come for you. I am death.
And let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Sean Kanan is an actor and a writer. He's also the creator of the digital series Studio City, available in the U.S. on Amazon Prime Video. Most daytime viewers will best remember him for his roles as Deacon Sharp on both The Young and the Restless and The Bold and the Beautiful, and as A.J. Quartermain on General Hospital. We had him on the show back in 2011 when his book, The Modern Gentleman, Cooking and Entertaining with Sean Kanan, came out. He joins us via Skype from California to talk about Studio City. Hi, Sean.
Hey, Peter. How are you? Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for being back on the program with us. First off the bat, as I said, we were talking about your book, The Modern Gentleman, way back in the day. How did the book do?
You know, the book did really well. It got a great reception. It got great reviews. A lot of people bought it and continued to buy it. And, you know, it was really a terrific project for me. So, you know, I worked on it. My wife took all the photos of all the food. We both put on 15 pounds while we were putting all the recipes together. But it was a great experience.
I think I said then, and it's proven now with all the work you've done to put together Studio City, that you're quite the Renaissance man. You do everything, and you do everything well.
It's nice of you to say. You know, I think when you're in the entertainment business, unless you're one of a very, very small group of people that seem to work consistently all the time, you know, you have periods in your career when, you know, you're looking for work. And for me, I find that really frustrating. So I'm always trying to do something to ensure that I'm busy. You know, sometimes my writing is, you know, more active than my acting. Sometimes my producing is more active than my writing. Sometimes the acting is more, you know, is busier than the other two. So I always make sure that I got something going on.
And one of the things that you have in common with both your book and Studio City is you have managed to find a way to collaborate really well with a spouse. A lot of people can't say they can do that. What is the secret to that success?
Well, first of all, my wife is incredibly patient. but, you know, Michelle is she's really, really talented. She's a very gifted writer. She has certain skill sets that I think, not that I lack, but that she does better than I do. She's extremely detail oriented, and organizationally driven. I'm kind of more of a big picture guy. She's, you know, able to handle a lot of the minutiae that it takes to do some of these things. And we just really complement each other, and we just, you know, we love each other and enjoy each other's company. So for us, when we're working together, it's usually a lot of fun.
Well, speaking of enjoying each other's company, how has it been since we've all been quarantined? Because I know that's put some strains and stresses on a lot of people. Has it brought you closer together, or what?
Absolutely. Look, first of all, I have nothing but sympathy and compassion for people that have lost loved ones, that have lost their, you know, their economic, you know, their source of income, et cetera. That's basically happened for most of us. Michelle and I have been, together during this quarantine the entire time. And, you know, we've actually, I almost feel guilty saying it, but we've really enjoyed the time that we've spent together. It's certainly brought us closer. We're together pretty much all the time anyway, so it's not really that different, our sort of day-to-day spending time together. We both tried to remain productive. I'm doing a lot of promotion right now for Studio City, and Michelle has been working on a new television project. So I think all things considered, we've been really fortunate, and have been trying to do the best we can to make the most out of this time together.
Well, we had on Carolyn Hennessy a couple of weeks ago talking about Studio City, so we know a little bit about the show, but again, this is your brainchild, this is your baby, so tell us about Studio City.
Well, first of all, we Michelle and I both adore Carolyn. She's, we were so fortunate to have her be a part of this. So Studio City is a short-form digital series. The first season has 6 episodes. They range between 10 and I think the longest one is 17 minutes. This is a project that's kind of been my baby for a really long time. One of those things that I would work on, I'd stick in my desk drawer, I'd pull it out, I'd work on it some more, try to get it made, and I just was really struggling to get it set up for a long time. Through a very fortunate series of events, I met the right partners, one of whom is a director named Timothy Woodward Jr. He's a terrific film director. I think Tim's done probably 15 feature films. And Tim directed all of our episodes as well as coming in as the showrunner. And what else can I tell you? The story centers around my character, Sam Stevens, who is the star of the number 2 soap opera in the country, Hearts on Fire. And Sam is an aging soap star. And he is in the middle of contract negotiations that aren't going well. And sort of a younger version of him is brought on the show as competition. And, you know, it deals with the show within a show. Carolyn Hennessy plays Gloria, who is the producer of Hearts on Fire. One of the things I've always liked about working on daytime, because you're shooting so many shows, effectively one show a day, it requires that you are constantly finding new subject matter. And so for that reason, soap operas are able to pull subject matter from the headlines of the day. And soap operas have always dealt with very pertinent and timely social issues. And I wanted to make sure we did that with Studio City. And in Studio City, we deal with, we have an LGBTQ storyline. We deal with ageism. We deal with suicide. We have a Me Too storyline. And, you know, it's all done in a way that doesn't kind of beat you over the head. You know, sometimes in Studio City, we want to make the audience laugh. Other times we want to make them cry. But we're always remembering that at the base of that, we want to be entertaining. And the show has just gotten an absolutely incredible reception. We currently have close to 20 nominations for different awards. We're right now in the voting period for the Daytime Emmys. And we have quite a few pre-nominations. Carolyn is pre-nominated for Best Supporting Actor. I'm pre-nominated for Best Lead Actor. The show is nominated for the Independent Series Awards, and on it goes. And we've been really fortunate that people are gravitating towards this and checking us out.
You mentioned a long gestation period in this coming to be. This was an idea you had a long time ago. Is it true that you've actually worked on this idea in one way, shape, or form for about 20 years?
Close, not quite 20, but yeah.
Okay, the reason why I asked the question is, when you first started thinking about this idea, two things were different. One, we didn't have streaming services back then. And two, we had a lot more soap operas on television at the time. Now we're only down to 4, unfortunately. 4 network television soap operas. So when you first created this in your head, when you first had this idea, how did you envision it playing out at the time? And how has that changed in the modern streaming world that we live in now?
That is an excellent question, Peter. Early on, I think I envisioned this as being a 30-minute show on one of the cable networks. As a matter of fact, it occurs to me that I even pitched this idea or some form of this to, I think it was Showtime, years and years ago. And I believe they had just bought a show called Fat Actress with, oh my God, now I'm back to spacing, from Cheers, Kirstie Alley. And we got some significant interest, and they sort of intimated that, you know, we bought this other show and we feel like there's some similarities, blah, blah, blah. So, and again, that's one of the times that it went back in the desk. And with the advent of all the streaming services, so many other opportunities for exhibiting the show emerged. I didn't envision this as being a short form digital series. And one of the things that we're discussing right now is, do we want to go to a longer format, which I'm very much in favor of, and are we going to stay on the same platform, which is Amazon Prime, or are we going to move somewhere else? So these are all questions that we're dealing with right now and hope to resolve in the next several months. You know, the one thing I do like about the short form digital format, though, is I think we all live in kind of a soundbite world right now. People move at a very quick pace. They want to determine what they want to watch, when they want to watch it, and now on what device they want to watch it. You know, gone are the days that the whole family meets on the couch at 8 p.m. on Thursday to go watch their favorite show once a week. You know, we have complete control of what we want to see, when we want to see it, how we want to see it. And, you know, Studio City, being a short-form digital series, is very digestible. You know, you can binge the entire first season, probably 90 minutes. If you're just watching one episode, you know, you can watch it during lunch or, you know, when you're waiting for a bus, etc. So that's one thing I really like about it. So, we're having those discussions right now.
We're talking with actor Sean Kanan, who is the star and the creator and the writer of a show called Studio City, which is available in the U.S. on Amazon Prime Video. We'll take a quick break and continue talking with Sean on the other side here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. This broadcast is coming to you from upstairs. Get out of the house.
And the Stuff File program is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Just click on the Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify buttons located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. And we are talking with actor Sean Kanan, the star and creator of the digital series Studio City, which is available in the U.S. on Amazon Prime Video. Now, I've happened to have a chance to see some clips of the show, and one of the things that caught my eye was, quite frankly, how beautifully shot it was.
Thank you.
It looks like a high-budget show, and I'm assuming that it's not a high-budget show, so kudos to you and the crew for putting that together the way you have.
It is not a high-budget show. Believe it or not, we shot all six episodes in 5 production days, I believe, which is insanity. I have to attribute a lot of this to my partner, Tim Woodward Jr. He grabbed his DP, who shoots most of his films, a guy named Pablo Diaz, and that's really what gave it the cinematic look that it has. And I think you're right. It's got a very different look than a lot of digital series that you see. It really is lit like a movie. It's got kind of a it's very pretty to look at, but it's also got kind of a gritty film look to it. And that's one of the things people are really commenting on.
Now, again, long gestation period and bringing the show to the forefront, to getting this from the idea stage to what it is now. You described the character you play earlier as an aging soap star. First of all, does it make you want to gag a little bit even when you say aging soap star? and was this the role you envisioned yourself having when you were still thinking about this some almost 20 years ago?
I did. Absolutely. I mean, you know, I've ratcheted up the age issue, obviously. I'm 53 years old now. I was younger when I began working on this, but it plays really well. You know, this is definitely, it's not a show specifically designed for soap opera fans. This is a guy that happens to work on a soap opera. You know, he's lived kind of in the B-minus celebrity bubble of fame all his life, and has always thought that he should have done more. He should have had a bigger career. He envisioned himself being an action star. And there's a great scene where, you know, Carolyn she's called me on the carpet in her office because I haven't signed the contract. And she said, you know, Sam, I know you want to be an action star. And, you know, do I have to say it? You're just too damn old. And Sam wanting more winds up coming in the form of a person that he never knew existed at the end of the pilot episode, and his entire world is thrown into chaos. And so that's one of the reoccurring themes that happens throughout the first season, is that characters are finding secrets and pieces of truth that they never knew existed, that challenge their reality. So I think people that have never watched a soap opera before, it doesn't matter. They're really going to enjoy this. And those people that are soap opera fans are going to recognize a few of their favorite actors. Carolyn Hennessy, she and I worked together on General Hospital. Patrika Darbo, who worked on Days of Our Lives and again later on Bold and the Beautiful. And Sarah Joy Brown, who played Carly on General Hospital. She and my character AJ Quartermain had a child, and Tristan Rogers, Robert Scorpio but you know what, and it sounds like it's loaded with soap stars, and it is, but that's not necessarily how the show is going to continue being. We're going to keep that great core group of people, but we're going to be bringing on other actors as the show evolves. And you know, I think for the soap opera fans, they're going to like that. And for people that are maybe more mainstream television watchers, they're going to see some other people that they recognize.
Anybody who's listened to me over the years knows that I am a big fan of soap stars, and I gush about the work that they do. And I've often said that acting in a soap opera is the hardest thing an actor will ever do because of the pages of dialogue that they have. I'm sure the audience hearing me say this right now is tired of hearing me say this because I've always said this. But you have an interesting situation. Unlike soap stars who usually start off in soaps, you came from a world of movies and television and more primetime work, and you were basically thrown into a soap situation where there's more pages of dialogue. So what was that transition like? Because most people tend to go the other way.
Yeah, I did it completely backwards. I started doing a big studio feature film, Karate Kid 3, and from there I went on to doing a short-lived nighttime television series called The Outsiders, based on S.E. Hinton's famous books, one of which was The Outsiders, with, you know, Ralph Macchio and Tom Cruise and Patrick Swayze and all those guys. And then in about 1992... I screen tested for General Hospital, and that's where my daytime career started. As far as having to learn all that dialogue, it was definitely challenging in the beginning. beginning. I think it's very much like going to the gym. You know, the more weight you lift, the more weight you can lift, the more you do it. And, you know, very quickly I had to really discipline myself to be able to memorize that much dialogue. And as I've gotten more experience and done it for a longer period of time, it's gotten easier. I guess it's a skill set that I'm fortunate I'm able to do. I mean, a lot of people say, wow, you must have a photographic memory, which I absolutely do not. But, you know, I've developed some strategies for myself to allow myself to learn a lot of dialogue very quickly.
You mentioned that you have bigger plans for Studio City. With what's going on right now with all the shutdown and COVID and so on and so forth, how has that put a crimp in your plans, and when do you hope to be up and running again?
Yeah, crimp is a polite way of discussing. Honestly, I don't know. I don't know, because you know, when you're working on a film or television set, you're working in close proximity to lots and lots of people, and that doesn't even address the issue of, you know, if you have to kiss somebody, or you know, generally when actors are talking to each other, they're very close. So I don't know. It's my hope that we're going to be able to get back into production sometime in the fall. You know, we've been discussing lots of really exciting ideas for subsequent episodes of the show. A lot of people have been clamoring to see more, but until this is resolved, it's largely out of our hands. We were steaming along, and then this hit. But you know, I have to say that as disappointing as that is, as you know, much as that's affected, you know, financial realities, you know, I've been fortunate. I haven't lost anyone that I love. No one I know is sick. And if the biggest problem I have right now is that I'm not able to shoot my TV show, then, you know, I think all things considered, I'm luckier than a lot of people.
Well, you're a very creative guy, obviously. You do a lot of writing. And I'm just wondering, this forced shutdown, how has that affected in any way, shape, or form, or heightened your creative juices? Do you find you're writing more? Are you more creative? What?
Yeah, you know, I'm doing a lot of thinking about what I want to do for the subsequent season. Michelle has been working diligently on her pet project, which is which is a show called Pretty Little Gun. Yeah, you know, I spend a lot of time reading. I love studying foreign languages, and so I'm really involved in studying Mandarin right now, and it's given me a lot of time to do that. But I think, like everybody else, I'm ready for this to be over.
And while it's still going on, I bring up the subtitle of your book, Cooking and Entertaining with Sean Kanan. Are you doing a lot of cooking?
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of cooking. I am doing a lot of cooking. Did you know I had another book come out? It came out last May. It's called Success Factor X, and I'm really proud of that book. It was named as one of the 20 best inspirational books of the last two decades by Book Authority. Wow. And that was an exciting project I'd love to tell you about for a few seconds. My writing partner Jill Lieberman and I went out to 50 incredible individuals and said, what's the best advice that you have about success? What does success mean to you? And we received an incredible response from everybody, from Anthony Robbins to Mark Cuban. We had baseball players, football players, Olympic athletes, Daryl McDaniels, founding member of Run DMC. And it was a really successful book. And so a little bit of what I've been doing during this downtime, too, is thinking about the possibility of doing a follow-up book to that one. So, you know, this is kind of a time when I've just been really doing some, I guess, mental alphabet soup, just trying to see, you know, what I want to do, coming up with ideas. Some are good, some aren't great, and figure out how, when we get out of this cocoon, I want to emerge creatively.
as I said, you had a long gestation period for Studio City. It is now out on Amazon Prime Video. At the time when you first started working on this, there were a lot more soap operas on TV. Now there are only four. You're streaming this show. You could be slingshotting your way from the back of the pack to the front of the pack as to where soaps may be going in the future.
Yeah, you know, there definitely has been a proverbial culling of the herd with daytime soap operas. You know, it's kind of become survival of the fittest. I don't know. You know, I think soap operas have a very loyal audience. You know, several of them, I think General Hospital and Days of Our Lives over the last couple of years have been in, you know, somewhat imminent danger of being canceled. Days was for about a second, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the reasons I think Bold the Beautiful has been able to survive is because it's syndicated in over 100 countries. You know, the United States just being one of the larger ones, but, you know, they're able to have an audience all around the world. Some of the other ones don't work that way. I don't know. I really hope that, you know, Studio City is ultimately going to emerge as a strong competitor and alternative to some of the more traditional soaps.
And the reason why I bring it up is I think that in the future, I think people are going to want to have their daytime soaps more on demand, in that it'll be available and on their devices in ways that it wasn't possible with traditional over-the-air network television.
Yeah, I think that entire paradigm of, like I said, you know, where you watch a show at a specific time is not the norm really anymore. I mean, you know, you're really on Netflix, you can watch what you want, when you want. Amazon Prime, you watch what you want, when you watch. And people, you know, once the genie's out of the bottle and people have experienced that kind of convenience and control, it takes more of a conscientious commitment to, you know, watch one show at one time, like the traditional shows that are still on the three big networks. You know, and I think that's something that Studio City offers. But that being said, you know, the four remaining soap operas do have very loyal audiences. And, you know, I really hope that they stick around. I think it would be unfortunate. I think, you know, soap operas are a really important part of the tapestry of American television. I think, if I'm not mistaken, next week, maybe, I'm not sure, there's like a 2-hour special coming out about the history of soaps. And it's being, again, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's being hosted by Alec Baldwin and John Hamm and a couple other, you know, big actors who I think had their starts on daytime. So I think soaps have a loyal audience, and I think they're gonna stick around. I sure hope so.
I often ask actors, especially ones who have had a long and illustrious career like yourself, is there anything in any role or any type of thing that you haven't had a chance to do that you would like to do? But in your case, you have written a television show and created a character for yourself. So is that still a fair question to ask you? Is there something you haven't done that you'd like to?
No, it's absolutely a fair question. I would very much love to do something on Broadway. Theater is really my first biggest love. I love the whole process. I love working in the theater. You know, the creativity, the length of time you have for rehearsal, I think lends itself to the best possible work. You know, because, you know, when you're working in television, especially soap operas, I mean, it's you know, it's such a rapid process that just by virtue of that, the deck is stacked against having the absolute best performances compared to some of the other mediums. And yet still we see tremendous performances in daytime. I also would love to do a Western. I think every actor wants to do a Western. You know what I mean? Every male actor. You know, I just love to have a gun and a horse and do something like that. So I think there's a lot of things that I have yet to accomplish in my career that I would like to. I was very fortunate that I did a film with Timothy Woodward Jr., which was a gangster period piece called Gangsterland, with Jason Patrick and Jamie Lynn Sigler. And it was set in, you know, the late 1920s Chicago during the Al Capone era. And that was a lot of fun.
Well, continued success with Studio City. May this run for a long time and you get to play an aging soap star forever.
Peter, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. Let's not make it another, 9 years until we speak again.
Actor Sean Kanan, the star and creator of the digital series Studio City, which is available in the U.S. on Amazon Prime Video. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0559, and you'll find links to the show and also to a preview of it. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
Latitude 47 degrees 14 minutes north. Longitude 84 degrees 39 minutes west. Location Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And once again, here he is, riding the bench, Stuart Nauman.
I actually warmed the bench in the short years I had as a peewee or midget hockey player. About 50 years ago. But you know what? In this edition of Book Banter, we're not going to warm the bench. We're going to go behind the bench, actually, with a biography of a very famous hockey NHL coach who started as a player and did even better as a coach. So, you know, because in most cases, Peter, an NHL player who distinguished themselves with a Hall of Fame career on the ice decides to transcend their playing skills and talents behind the bench as a coach usually doesn't pan out. The one rare exception to that case was Hector Toe Blake. He was a native of Sudbury, Ontario, as one of 13 siblings. He started his NHL playing career in 1935 as part of the storied Montreal Maroons. And then the next year, he joined the rival Montreal Canadiens. And before his playing career ended, thanks to a fractured leg in 1948, Blake served as team captain, led the team to two Stanley Cup championships, won the Hart and Lady Byng trophies, and was one third of the Habs' famed punchline along with Elmer Locke and Maurice Richard. Then came phase two of his pro hockey career after getting his feet wet, helming minor league hockey teams in Houston, Buffalo, and Valley Field. He was signed to be head coach of the Canadiens in 1955, and during his 13 years as its coach, Toe Blake led the Habs to 8 Stanley Cups, including the remarkable record run of 5 consecutive Cups between 1956 and 60, before he hung up his trademark fedora in 1968. So from then until his death from the ravages of Alzheimer's disease in 1995, Toe Blake became a highly regarded and much respected figure in the Canadiens organization, whether as a goodwill ambassador, front office executive, or a special team consultant, not to mention owner and proprietor of his self-named tavern in the heart of downtown Montreal for 31 years. But what was Toad Blake really like, and what motivated and drove him to the pinnacle of success in the NHL, both on the ice and behind the bench? Well, that question is certainly answered with flying colors in Paul Logothetis' book, Toad Blake, which is the first biography to be published about this Hall of Famer. Now, first of all, Blake had a love of hockey from the time he was a boy growing up in the town of Coniston, Ontario, which provided him a means of escape from the Great Depression. And then their second, according to the author, is that Blake was a firm believer in the principle of winning is everything, and strongly instilled that feeling to his teammates and players that he coached. He also subscribed to the idea of fire wagon hockey, the offensive attacking approach to the game that became the signature style of the Canadiens. And third, Blake had a great deal of faith in his players and encouraged them to develop their own style of play within the team structure, as well as driving them hard but fair as they were in the midst of developing their signature playing styles. And Logothetis cleverly uses contemporary newspaper articles and interviews, as well as interviews with many of the players who played alongside him and for him, in order to get a complete picture of a man who was not only highly respected in hockey circles, but was also a complex, tortured individual who dealt with many personal issues outside of his coaching duties at the Forum, such as his volatile temper, helping his wife Betty battle cancer, and dealing with the pressure he received from fans and the press when the Habs were eliminated early from the playoffs between 1961 and 1964. But this biography of Toad Blake is a fascinating study of an all-around hockey person whose skills as a player and coach helped to build the Montreal Canadiens to become the iconic franchise that they are regarded as today. And hopefully, future generations of hockey fans years later will read this book will appreciate Toad Blake's lasting contributions to the game before they become permanently forgotten. And one way to do that, according to the author, is to raise Blake's number 6 sweater to the rafters of the Bell Center.
I'm sure there are some very, very young children, those who are preschoolers right now, who are probably asking the question, what's hockey?
Yeah. They won't get that chance this year, but I bet you next year they'll get that chance to find out what hockey's all about. All or right. If their dad's subscribed to the NHL Network on their TV system, so maybe they'll get a little bit of taste of that.
By the way, I'm not willing to take that bet. Just telling you that right now.
The thought of watching hockey every Saturday night, it's not the same as it used to be, put it that way, when Blake was at the height of his coaching career.
Absolutely.
So, I'm afraid you're right about that one.
So this book is entitled?
It's called Toad Blake by Paul Logothetis. It's published by ECW Press, and it's $24.95.
And what other books in this genre do you want to bring up?
Well, there are books about coaches and coaching in the NHL. First, I want to bring up Dick Irvin's book, Behind the Bench, which he interviewed about a dozen NHL coaches, past and present, to find out what's like to be a professional hockey coach. And Ken Dryden wrote a book about one of the only two coaches he played for the Canadiens, and that's Scotty Bowman, which was released last fall. It's a terrific book. It's a great. He's just as complex and dedicated as Toad Blake was, and he's the winningest coach in the history of the NHL. And it's a fascinating book.
And you managed to get through an entire segment about hockey books without bringing up Roch Carriere.
I'm afraid he's not even mentioned in the hockey sweaters. So, Toad Blake isn't. Just Maurice Richard. No. There are times when Roch just has to sit on the bench and warm it once in a while.
Oh, a callback. Nicely played, sir.
Thank you.
Nicely played.
What a cannonading shot.
Absolutely. Again, this week's book is?
Called Toad Blake by Paul Logothetis. It's published by ECW Press, and it's $24.95.
And which end of the rink can most of our readers and listeners find you, sir?
Well, you could probably find me on the blue line or on the Montreal Times every week in print or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
Well, you're welcome, Peter.
Stuart Nauman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, and also on Spotify. The Washington Examiner reported on April 21st that some people appear to be spending their coronavirus stimulus checks on another kind of stimulation. The adult live model site, cams.com, says it has seen a surge in traffic, said Gunnar Taylor, Director of Strategic Development for Friend Finder Networks, of which cams.com is a part. Since April 13th, we've seen a 22% uptick in traffic on our live streaming site, and tips to our models have increased by 40%. Traffic from Washington State is up 204%, and it's up 83% in Illinois. But it's down in Washington, D.C. by 29%. Well, people are getting their freak on at home, but not in the U.S. nation's capital. Don't quite know what to make of that, so let's just move on. Now, I've never had roommates. Call me selfish, but I've never wanted roommates. And it's stories like this one that solidify that very thought. Three roommates at Northwest Iowa Community College in Sheldon, Iowa, were charged on April 20th with assault in response to an event that took place on March 13th. 20-year-olds Lindsay Ann Cundiff and Ellie Thompson and 19-year-old Kaya Elaine Kastner allegedly removed dry skin from the bottom of one of their feet and added it to a fourth roommate's shredded cheese, then watched her eat it. No word on what else was in the dish. But seriously, isn't that enough? Here's hoping this trio never work in the food services industry. And if they do jail time, please don't let them work in the kitchen. In a COVID-19 lockdown-related statement made by Albury, New South Wales, Australia's top cop, Paul Smith, you can only leave your home with a reasonable excuse, and I think people really need to get educated about that. People need to look at what is essential. Mere hours after he said that, a man got into a car crash in nearby Lavington. In addition to a charge of driving while disqualified, because they never have a license that's valid in stories like these, the driver was given a fine for traveling for a non-essential purpose. He told officers he was traveling to see his drug dealer. Okay, I want to be perfectly clear here. In no way am I advocating drug use. They're illegal. I've never been a fan, never tried them, not interested. I just want to point out that during this pandemic, alcohol sales have been considered essential because we can't have stir-crazy people locked away in their homes going into withdrawal. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. 4 years ago, a baby was found abandoned in an Orlando, Florida apartment complex. The next year, a baby girl was found in a stairwell of the same complex with a note asking whoever found her to take her to a fire station for safe haven. Last year, a one-day-old boy was found on a doorstep in the complex with a note saying that the mother feared his father. After the third baby was found, detectives submitted DNA from all three for analysis and learned that they all shared the same parents. Detectives are now trying to use the genealogical information to try to identify them, wrote one detective in a letter to Police Chief Orlando Roland, based on the egregious and neglectful behavior of the parents and the bizarre facts of this case. Unlike any other documented case, it is imperative to conduct a well-being check of all involved parties. Well, first you have to track the parents down, but here's a thought. You could start by asking people in the apartment complex if they ever noticed a woman who was pregnant for 3 years running but is never seen with an infant. That might go a long way to helping to solve this mystery. You know, anyone can be a parent, but you need a license to get a dog. Just saying. Anyway, boys and girls, It's that moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This stuff all presents the Idiot of the Day.
A wealthy Instagram influencer will have to see how much he influences an Aussie judge. Rich kid Daniel Langanis, who is 20, who flaunts his luxe lifestyle on social media, was arrested for stealing groceries worth $95. Among the pilfered treasures were Skittles and chicken thighs. His antics were captured on CCTV. He has now pleaded guilty to shoplifting. He told cops he, quote, could have paid for the groceries, but didn't. He is now on a six-month, $300 good behavior bond, and he called it all a stupid mistake. Judge Simon Young told him, it wasn't a mistake. You've made a decision. Yeah. Now why? Oh, why? If you are an internet influencer, and I'm doing air quotes for influencer, and you have apparently more money than God, would you steal $95 worth of groceries? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0559. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0559. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.